is 6:30 according to the atomic clock.
All right.
Can you
read
that?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
If I squint a little.
I'm going to call the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee to order, please. A copy of the Open Meeting Act is posted at the rear of the room and outside the room as well. With that, quorum call, please.
Director Fred Conley?
Here.
Director Deezer?
Here.
Director Thompson?
Here.
Alternate Director Dapp?
Here.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes, I'm here. Item 4 is the adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Dapp?
Yes.
Director Deezer?
Yes.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Director Fred Conley?
Yes, I have here a copy of the affidavit of publication of this notice of this meeting, and we'll put that in the permanent records. So moving now to item 6 is an update on Zrinski Basin number 2, Amanda Grint and John Engel. Good evening, welcome.
Let John do most of the talking, but as you know, we've been working on the preliminary design for Zrinski Basin 2, which is the fourth of the planned water quality basins for Zrinski to protect the water quality of Zrinski Lake. And we've been working on preliminary design, about ready to wrap that up. And so I'll let John give you an update on where we're at through preliminary design, and then we'll talk just a minute about where we're at with land acquisition.
All right. Thank you, Amanda.
Identify yourself with this.
Yes, John Engel with HDR Engineering, 8404 Indian Hills Drive, Omaha, Nebraska, 68114. Tonight, as Amanda said, that we're at a point over the last 10 months, we've taken the project from the concept to through preliminary design and the permit Section 404 permit application. I thought it would be a good time to provide an update to the board on the activities and the status of the project. Tonight I'm going to talk about a little background for all those that may need it, talk about the project elements, some of the issues and items that are key to the design. I'll touch on the Section 404 permitting and the status of that, and then talk a little bit about the next steps and the schedule. And finally, as Amanda said, we'll talk about the land acquisition. So a little bit on the background. And does this have a pointer? Yeah, there it is. So just to orientate you, West Dodge Road is at the top. West Center cuts through kind of the middle of this larger basin. Zrinski Lake is right here. And following the construction of Zrinski Lake, there was a watershed plan that was developed, and for protection of the water quality within Zrinski Lake, as part of that effort, there were 4 water quality basins that were identified, and that included Basin 1, 3, and 4, which are in place right now. And the basin we're going to be talking in more detail about is Zrinski Basin 2, and to give you kind of an orientation, this is West Center Road. This north-south is 204th Street or Highway 631, and it's just to the southwest corner of that intersection. This is a closer view of it. It kind of shows the drainage area. It's about 1,000 acres total. The dam location is approximately right here. This is F Street. And this, again, is 204th Street or Highway 631. Some of the project elements, one of the unique things about it, and I don't know if you haven't been out there recently, is you better be careful. There's a lot of big equipment with yellow paint on site. This area here was mass graded. This is the Grand View development. Is already mass graded, and there's several houses, model homes under construction right here. And currently, this area here, the Blue Sage Creek, is being developed and mass graded right now. So there's a lot of construction activity ongoing. There's a school that's been located here for Elkhorn. Again, 204th Street, F Street. The major design elements I wanted to point out that is one of them was a 54-inch water main, a finished water main of MUD crosses the creek at this location. And we'll be under the normal pool. So we've worked closely with MUD and in looking at, ensuring that the water on top of the additional water on top of their line, the potential sediment deposition would not cause any structural issues and access issues to their finished water main. The outfall sewer for this portion of the watershed skirts around the left abutment of the dam, and so we've worked closely with them to make sure that it's located outside of the extents of the normal pool as well as where it intersects the dam alignment to make sure that it doesn't threaten the integrity and function of the dam long term. It's an earthen embankment dam with a labyrinth weir and baffled chute spillway, and I've got a little bit closer view of the dam embankment itself. It's about 1,000 feet, about 30 feet in height. This is a labyrinth weir and baffled chute combination spillway that provides the water quality function. This is a little bit unique in a lot of the dams that its sole purpose is water quality, to capture sediment and control the sediment load from this 1,000-acre basin to protect Zirinsky Lake. In dealing with the Nebraska Department of Natural Resources, we went through a hazard classification exercise, and based on location and potential risks, it is a high hazard structure, so it's designed to the most stringent criteria as required by the department. This is just a plan view of the labyrinth weir and baffle structure that serves as both the principal and auxiliary spillway. It does have a gate, a 4x4 gate structure here that will be used for level control. And the way this functions is it'll be this labyrinth weir is really controls the overall discharge, but we can control water level with this gate. And the thought is that you keep that water level and maintain a pool that's adequate for those more frequent events that carry the majority of your sediment load to be temporarily stored and detained and discharged through that smaller opening and allow that sediment to deposit within the reservoir. Less frequent events, those types of 50 and 100-year events, will then utilize the entire spillway and will be discharged through the chute and energy dissipated with a baffle structure prior to ending the downstream channel. And this energy dissipator is very similar to the water quality basin. This is actually the one for Prairie Queen. If you're down on 132nd Street just north of 370 on the west side of the road, you will see this chute structure that provides the same function for that water quality basin. One of the other elements of the project was working closely with the city and the Natural Resource District, as well as the surrounding developments as part of the Omaha and Douglas County Master Plan for Parks. And Amanda, you can probably help me on the how new that plan is, but my understanding is that development must kick in and are responsible for funding the community parks that are in the master plan. And so as part of that effort and looking to incorporate and maximize the recreational amenity of this site, we work closely with them in outlining where would the community park be located, what are some of the trail features, the crossings, and the amenities that would ultimately be built by the funding provided by the city and the developers at this site. And so they laid out a park feature here. There's a smaller park site at this location with some access, a trail that goes all the way around the facility, and a crossing structure to link the trails, the north and south portions.
Yeah, I would just maybe add, so this site's a little different than our normal reservoir sites where we provide those recreation features with the project. If you remember on Zirinsky Basin 1, it does not have any of the recreation features. The reason this one does is because there's a community park right in the area, and so those surrounding SIDs will pay for the recreation features. And the City of Omaha paid for the recreation plan, but we worked in a coordinated effort.
The opinion of probable construction cost by major work item is summarized here with the general mobilization, demobilization, quality control survey, stormwater pollution prevention plan items, the actual preparation of the site. There's a significant amount of trees that are located in the vicinity of the dam itself. The dam and then the concrete spillway structure. The wetland and stream mitigation, I'll talk a little bit more in detail about that in a second. The MUD waterline impacts, they have a drain hydrant that needs to be relocated, as well as access manholes that need to be elevated, that need to be placed. And that work will be done by MUD. This is a placeholder. They're still evaluating and doing the design on what those improvements are. For the grand total of the construction cost estimate at this time is $3.57 million. Touch a little bit on the permitting. The permitting's been done coincident with the design effort over these past 10 months, and have worked closely with the Corps and in walking through the purpose and need and alternatives and screening. And I guess our approach is always when the Corps starts asking about mitigation, that's always a good sign. So I feel in some ways we're in pretty good shape with the 404 permit, and that will be submitted this week.
We submitted it today.
Submitted today. There it is. So a couple things about the permitting. This is a map of the site and some of the wetlands that were delineated on site. And most of them were around, there was an existing farm pond on this property right here. And most of the wetlands were associated with that structure. And I know we had several conversations about, well, we're just making them wetter. What's the impact? And of course that didn't sell. But I think all told, we had about 4.5 acres of wetlands that were impacted, and about 5,600 feet of stream channel that was impacted either by the pool or there, a very small amount of that is impacted by the embankment up here that require mitigation. The good news is the mitigation plan we submitted does not require additional land to be acquired. We've been able to mitigate the wetland impacts by using the fringe around the proposed normal pool. And that's this area hatched in yellow that would be the wetland mitigation. And by doing some minor channel improvements and increasing things like the buffer width along this stretch of the channel here, we can mitigate the ecological function of the impacted channel. There was a small number of forested wetlands that were impacted, and we coordinated that with the Dam Site 15A effort that also had some forested wetlands because of their close proximity, and there's a little additional area there. It was really a win-win for all parties to be able to mitigate that small portion of forested wetlands at that site. It was a win that we didn't have to acquire additional land, and certainly from the Corps standpoint, they prefer continuous mitigation sites to the extent possible. The next steps, as we said, the preliminary design has been completed. The Section 404 permit application was submitted today. We'll be developing a contract for the Phase 2 final design. We do have a few things such as support in preparing some of the legals for purchase agreements and elements like that that will be going on this month and continuing that effort before we get to the final design contract. We have a substantial amount of budget left on the contract that will cover those services and will likely be a credit towards the final design contract, as it's not a lump sum contract. The plan for final design is April through July, and having a package for bid at the end of July, advertisement and bidding during the month of August, and bringing a recommendation of award for a construction contract to this board in September. And certainly the bidding and construction start date are dependent on the Corps' processing time with the 404 authorization, but at this point we're cautiously optimistic that 6 months will be adequate for them to dot their I's and cross their T's. The one thing about the schedule that is nice about if we can get a fall start for a couple reasons. One is migratory birds and the raptors and all of those elements. Because of the nesting requirements and observation, it's always preferable to do any clearing of trees in the fall. And so that's one reason. The second reason is because we're using a structural spillway, we'll be surcharging this and to get that work done in the fall and have that downtime for settlement to occur through a freeze-thaw cycle is really advantageous as well. So we'd like to certainly start in the fall and for those reasons. With that, I'll turn it over to you.
Just real briefly, I wanted to talk about land acquisition. So tonight's just an update to let you know where we're at. So things that you can expect and look forward to are a phase two contract to get us through final design and construction documents and bidding with HDR. That should be ready for you for your consideration in April. Also hoping to have a couple of land acquisitions in front of you. Title commitments are completed on all of the sites. Phase one environmentals are completed. We're working on appraisals, should be done in the next week and a half to 2 weeks, and legal descriptions. We've identified the area shown here that we need for the project, so working on legal descriptions for those tracts. So hopefully you'll be seeing some land acquisitions in April as well. And that's all. If there's any questions?
How many acres are involved in this project?
I believe it's about 78. Does that sound?
Yeah, I made a note on that. Yeah, it's about 74 acres, and that's fee title. And then we've got some easements in there, both permanent easements and construction easements. We have about an acre of temporary easement off of 204th Street for construction. And then we've got about 5 1/4 acres of permanent easement.
Any other questions or comments? Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. I might ask this before, but will there be fish?
And we're not planning to work with Game and Parks on this particular structure because the city's intent is for it to fill in with sediment and become a wetland eventually. And that could be sooner than later, depending on the construction and the watershed. And so we didn't feel that investing money in fisheries in this case was a good call.
I'm sorry, one more question. When it fills with sediment, does it then become dredged out or just stays a wetlands forever?
So you could dredge it out if you want it to remain a lake.
Right.
But the city will take ownership of this upon completion because it's in their jurisdiction. They have indicated that they don't want to do that. It would be up to them if they wanted to down the road.
So essentially this is turned over to the city project.
Yeah. We maintain an easement to take care of the embankment and spillway and the functioning parts of the water quality.
You mentioned the recreational aspects. Is the trail going to be on the SID's property or within our boundaries? Or?
Probably be within the boundary of the, that we purchased for the project.
Okay, but then how are we working out that they will both, I guess I'd use a paper, city.
The city will handle that, and so the way that they've explained it is they have a recent shift in how they handle community parks, and the way that works is they write it into the subdivision agreement that the SIDs will work together to fund the park features, and it's very vague, but we've had two of the adjacent SIDs present during the concept planning, so this is what they want to see. So it seems like at the last adjacent development would be the one that has to construct it, unless one of the other developments wants it first. Then they have to construct it, and the others pay them back.
In the main, in the middle of the south of it, where it says West Park site, is that not a little green space, or that whole space doesn't look like it's been platted at all? But that's not our concern.
That has not been platted, and we're anticipating purchasing that.
Okay, well, south of that too, F Street.
South of that, yes. Right. So that south part is owned by, or had option, or however that works, by this Grandview development. It'll be a future phase of Grandview.
Okay. Any other questions?
Do they have a name?
Yeah.
I've got one.
I got to ask about the water main.
I thought you might.
That's a 54-inch steel water main across.
Yes.
And how much? It's got normal fill on it now, but I assume. But how much fill is going to be on it as the project as lake fills up?
Yeah, I thought I in the back. I thought I may have included. There's the profile of the water main there, and I think
I don't. Oh, okay. That I see. All right.
Yeah. So right here is the 54-inch as it goes under the existing creek.
Right.
Here's existing ground line, and we went out and did some survey and some soundings, and it's the normal pool and the sediment level is approximately about right here. I think it's a total of about 13 or 14 feet would be the maximum height of fill at the time the reservoir has been full of sediment, and we did some load calcs for that and worked with MUD on that, and they came back with that. The, one of the things was the potential of relocating if the loads would have been too much for it, but it's all right to withstand the loading.
If they needed access to that, how quickly will you be able to drain the lake down so that they can get access to it, fix something that breaks on the main?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I didn't touch on it. That one of the values of the labyrinth weir, that gate that I referenced, that's a level control, that'll go down to elevation 78. It's located up here. So in an emergency, you'd be able to pull those out and lower it to elevation 78. And then there's a 24-inch drawdown pipe that is located, and that invert is down at 56, that could completely drain the reservoir. And it would be I ran the calcs on that, and it was less than a day. It was about...
Really? Yeah,
between the two, I believe it was somewhere around 20 hours they'd be able to draw it down.
Thank you. I won't bug you anymore.
No, we've spent a lot of time.
I'm glad you did. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you for being here tonight, John.
Thank you.
Amanda as well. Amanda had to be here, though.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're moving ahead to item 7 is a review and recommendation on update to the groundwater management plan. That'd be Paul Woodward, Karen Griffin with Olson Associates. Oops, somebody's starting to get
static.
Okay. Good evening. We're getting the PowerPoint pulled up.
But I'm Paul Woodward. This is Karen Griffin with Olson Associates. She's the project manager for the plan update and primary author. It's okay, because I was first going to start out by just reviewing a couple things out of the memo to brief you on kind of where we've been and where we're at. We started this over a year ago, and we last updated the board in July. At that point, we had kind of completed pulling all the data together and starting some of these maps that Karen's going to show you tonight. But then we were just beginning the process of getting the stakeholders together and starting to discuss the plan with them. So we went through that stakeholder involvement basically into November of last year. And then since that time, we've been pulling together components of the plan. Also, as we'll discuss, meeting with some of the adjacent NRDs, as well as talking to the stakeholders, and then others that would be involved. So where we go from here, basically, is the preliminary draft that we have in front of you tonight would need to be submitted to DNR. DNR will handle reviewing it on their own, but also sharing it with other state agencies like Health and Human Services and DEQ, and UNL. So all those will provide input during this 90-day review period. At the same time, as we'll point out in this plan, this sets up a number of different things that you can do. And we really did spend a lot of time with the stakeholders about what we want to do as far as implementable controls or actions. So in order for the district to make those implementable, we would have to put stuff in our rules and regulations. And so what we're kind of proposing is, after we get done with submitting this to DNR, we start to pull together rules and regulations. And so the final thing that would come before a public hearing and then eventually the board would be to, one, approve the plan, two, to look at adopting new rules and regulations that take actions from those plan, from that plan, and make them, you know, what we're actually going to do and enforce in our district. And then three would be to designate groundwater management areas, both for quality and quantity in the NRD. We don't currently don't have anything designated, so we're kind of starting from scratch as far as that goes. So Mike, can you get the presentation there real quick? No, the PowerPoint presentation. In March 2017, there should be either. Can you go to the S drive from here? Apologize for that. There you go. Yep, that one. That's all right. Okay, so in addition to the status, what we're going to go over tonight, Karen's going to go over how we defined, how we brought all the data together and defined kind of the water, the groundwater resources that we have in a series of maps. She'll talk about the stakeholder committee process and what we did there. I'll go through how we looked at the water quality and quantity data we have to determine kind of if we were to designate groundwater management areas, what would they be? And then we'll talk about some of the potential controls and then what's next. So quickly, I'm going to go, why are we updating the plan? This was provided quite a bit in context last time. But in general, when we adopted a new IMP, there's several things in there that we need to sync with our groundwater management plan. And the idea is not to develop a new plan where we have to keep updating back and forth. So the way we've set up the new groundwater management plan you have is that it references the IMP. So if we want to update the IMP, we won't have to go back and revise this. We've talked quite a bit about the different data that was available to us over the last 20 or plus years. You'll hear a lot about consistency with adjacent NRDs. We got a lot of their groundwater management plans, looked at them, compared them to what we could be doing in our district, and then actually met with them and touched base so there was no misunderstandings as to who was doing what. We want to, but we also want a plan that's unique to us. So we pick certain things that fit what we need to do and what will help us manage our groundwater resources best. And then we have discussed that there's been increasing pressure on our groundwater resources. Now, population doesn't necessarily lead to increased use, but it does lead to some increased management actions that need to be looked at. As an example of that, we were able to look at where everybody gets their public drinking water supply. On the left, you'll see all the different, these are the wellhead protection areas. And then on the right, it doesn't include all the service areas of the municipalities. It includes MUD's service area, but it also mainly shows the service area for the different rural water districts, the three that the Papio NRD runs, and then the Logan East Rural Water, which is run by Lower Elkhorn NRD. So pulling all that data together, you look at that, and the good news is out of our 750,000 plus people, 97% of them have some sort of public drinking water supply. That's at least 8,000 from rural water and so on. So they know what kind of water they're drinking. The issue we get to is, and why we're really pushing the purpose of this plan and our need to kind of be proactive, is that if you just look at that less than 3%, that's over 20,000 people that are getting their water from domestic wells. They may have at one time taken a water quality test. They may be able to look at some of our data and get an idea. But in a lot of cases, they're not testing what they're drinking. So that's out there. And plus, there's the overall case of how many of those wells are there. So it takes 200 wells to service this 97%. It takes over 6,700 wells, that's estimated, to serve the 20,000 people that use them. Let Karen proceed from here.
Okay. So I'm going to switch over to the PDF for just a minute here. All right. So what I wanted to do is just give you a little bit of an update on what you had in part of your packet for review. There's a two-volume set that the groundwater management update is completed in. The first, it was included in your updates provided last week, and then a hard copy of the first volume is with your packet. And the first volume is actually the text, but the second volume is what I'm, as a geologist, really excited to show you tonight. That is the maps that we developed to better understand your aquifers and geology of the area. So just going to flip through a couple of them. There were 21 maps. They're all oversized, 11 by 17. And we've developed these for many NRDs across the state, and the directors as well as the staff use them often in these kinds of meetings to assess what are the issues related to wells and groundwater in the area. One of the first maps, let me just click ahead, was shown to you before, is that sand and gravel thickness map showing where the aquifers are thicker and thinnest. The thicker areas were are in green along the Missouri River. The thinner aquifers are in red and yellow in the center uplands. And we'll go into a lot more detail. But just if you want to get a feel for what these maps involve, they also show density of wells. This is illustrating where there's red areas, there's wells of higher density networks of wells. In the green areas, there's a low density of wells. The reason you want to understand this is some of the NRDs are seeing significant conflicts between wells, and so understanding where you have the highest density is important. Other information on infiltration rates, what are types of soils that have high infiltration rates, because that can lead to additional concentrations of contaminants from the surface. Where your water table levels are shallow or deep, putting those two maps together, we come up with a map that illustrates where your groundwater resources are most vulnerable, where your water table is high and your soil types are sandy. All that kind of information is provided in the maps, and it was used in developing this plan. So with that, I'll just move on to the PowerPoint, back to the PowerPoint. So as Paul mentioned, we had pulled together a significant group of stakeholders, and we'll talk about their involvement in the process. Let's see, I guess I go ahead, don't I? Paul went over that. So what we've done with those geologic and hydrogeology maps that we developed, we've identified the primary reservoirs for your district, and they are based on reviewing the wells that are marked as dots on the map. We identified the Missouri River alluvium, the Platte and Elkhorn alluvium, which is down in the, this area, of course, along the river, those alluvial valleys. And then the upland areas, which is where there are isolated, disconnected aquifers, glacial in origin, that have less voluminous water quantities, and that's where you can see the well conflicts. The underneath the primary aquifers, the secondary aquifers, which are the bedrock aquifers. They are they're accessed where the primary aquifer is not sufficient to supply the amount of water that is needed. So to illustrate that, we developed these geologic block diagrams using your AEM data that Paul will go into in a little bit later to illustrate to folks during our stakeholder meetings the different geologic units. The yellow lines coming down are just to illustrate how wells can be developed in the quaternary system, and they'll be drilled into the sand and gravel aquifers. But certain areas in your district, there aren't going to be those pocket or isolated aquifers, so there are wells that are drilled down into the Dakota group. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about the secondary aquifers. At the stakeholder meetings, we brought together groups of water users, including municipal water suppliers, agricultural folks, industry, as well as county representatives, two of which are here today that were helpful in our stakeholder meetings. I also had a group of advisory members. Many of these advisory groups will be reviewing the plan in the future, so it was good to have them involved all the way along during development of the plan. Typically, the stakeholders' roles, as with the IMP, this in the groundwater management plan, we need to hear from them what are the issues related to groundwater in their areas. And they also get a lesson in geology because they get to hear from Karen, the geologist, right? they provide input on the management area, the boundaries of these aquifers, and how we will define how the life goals for these reservoirs. They provided input on what they wanted to see in the groundwater management plan, and this was I'll go into a little more detail here, as well as inform others about the process. Being that they came to the meetings, we were hopeful that they would talk to their neighbors and friends about how this is going to change some of the groundwater rules and regulations coming in the future. We did provide a website that is still available. It provides all the meeting minutes and all the information that was provided to the stakeholders. If you're interested, that is available to any and all. We had the stakeholder group broken into the northern and the southern portions of the district. So three of the meetings were up in Dakota City, and the remaining three were down here. And as you can imagine, the two stakeholder groups had slightly different interests, more rural up to the north, more urban interests down to the south. So that was good to hear from both. Some of the many quotes and information that we gathered from those groups related to quantity and quality, which is the main objectives of defining the groundwater management plan. In terms of quantity, they recognize the important distribution of aquifers in that they identified that the availability of water varies greatly across the district, and they recognize the need to manage those aquifers differently so that in areas where there are insufficient water supplies, that the restrictions are maybe more strict. In the water quality arena, the biggest issue that was identified was nitrates. That would be anthropogenic water quality issues. There are also other issues that are related to natural occurring items like iron and magnesium. The stakeholder groups did provide information. One of the main things that they wanted to hear about was what are NRDs in the surrounding area and what are you doing right now in the Capio, Missouri NRD. So we compared what are the rules related to water quality to the districts in the surrounding area. And you can see at the current groundwater management plan really doesn't identify any water quality controls to ensure that there aren't any additional issues related to nitrate contamination, whereas many of the other NRDs had several water quality controls in place. So Paul will go into some of the suggestions that they've made. I'm not going to go into any more details of this right here. What was the main thing that came out of the primary meetings were to identify when would specific water quality requirement come into play. So what are the triggers that are going to cause a groundwater management area to have higher controls? So primarily we looked at the levels of nitrates, since that is the primary concern of groundwater, drinking water in the area. So as the increase, as nitrates are found to be increasing in the groundwater reservoirs, then the water quality controls would increase in these different phases. It's all based on the contamination level with nitrates. But if another contaminant is identified in the monitoring, then it would be a similar process where if more than half of the samples are identified to have concentrations of the MCLs that are higher than 50% of the MCL, then they would be put in a phase two area for quality. And same type of thing we went through with water quantity rules. I'm not going to go into details. These were handouts to the stakeholders with a lot of detail as to what is being implemented in NRDs in the surrounding area. But as you can see with the current plan, there were areas where there were no specific requirements identified. And many of these requirements are in place to ensure that the water quantity is available for future generations so that you don't deplete your aquifers too fast. So in the same sense as with quality, there are water quantity triggers that were set up. Level one being the entire district is being managed and monitored for water quantity. Level two is when you, after monitoring for quantity, you see that there is a decline in your aquifers of up to 10%. That would put you in a level two area. A level three is if you see an average decline of greater than or 15% in the saturated thickness of the aquifer. So those are the types of systems that will be set in place with the groundwater management plan. And that, again, as I said, was based on input and acceptance through the stakeholder group meetings. With that, I'll leave it to Paul.
Okay, so based on those triggers, the stakeholders and, of course, you guys would like to know, how does our current data tell us about, are we going to have a lot of level ones area, a lot of phase two water quality areas? So in order to do that, we did evaluate the historic data that we had. And I'm going to talk about quantity first. So that last slide talked about percentage of saturated thickness. And the saturated thickness, as was shown on the map that Karen showed earlier, kind of goes from whatever the water table is down to the bedrock or to the bottom of that aquifer. And it actually varies for each well that we measure during the year. This study, so we wanted to see how we'd be similar to other NRDs. There are other NRDs that set a pre-development level. They saw when they started defining groundwater levels, this was the water table when they began. So they say, we don't want to fluctuate too much from that. Other NRDs that have looked at this and looked at the sensitivity have found that perhaps using an average, if you have a fair amount of data, using an average is a better starting water table to say this is the saturated thickness. And again, as that average may vary a little bit, the thickness doesn't change a whole lot. Probably the biggest things to point out here, depending on how many years of record you have for the average and how thick the aquifer was to begin with. It's only 30 feet. Your fluctuation might be more. Here's an illustration of that. So right now we're talking about if our NRD used an average. This is one where you have a very long period of record, 38 years of record. And so this average isn't going to change much. And this is in the Platte and Elkhorn River Valley. The current saturated thickness that would then be right at 60 feet. This is kind of the start of sand and gravel. This is the top of the ground. Zero is basically the top of the ground. So over the years, these are the fluctuations that we've seen in our water level measurements. On average, they do, and just to kind of point out, we didn't want triggers that were so strict that we would be going in and out of different levels or changing all the time. And because our aquifers are so connected to our rivers, like in the Missouri and on the Platte and Elkhorn, they do fluctuate quite a bit. So we want to be able to account for that. So that's where our 10% here, you know, we're not really getting anywhere close to the decline that would get us into a higher level. So just to prove that point, these are a comparison of last year's groundwater elevations to the long-term average. Anything over, anything yellow or green is at or slightly above average. So we don't really have any wells that are of particular concern. Therefore, everything we would look at would be level one as far as groundwater quantity. Quality, as we've pointed out in the past, there are some variances across the district as far as our groundwater quality goes. So we're going to look at that in a little more detail. And Karen pointed out 5 parts per million was what would be the trigger to go into that phase two. 9 would be the trigger to go into phase three. 10 parts per million for nitrate is actually the maximum contaminant level. So we looked at all the different reservoirs combined and looked at a lot of different samples that we had over the years. So looking at a lot of different sample results, we don't have a lot of those anywhere where the entire aquifer, as it's connected, is going over 50%, or 50% of those samples are showing us that we should be in a phase two.
So that's good news.
That's good news. But, but we don't have to take a groundwater management area. It has to be a minimum of 9 square miles in size. So it can be a smaller subarea of these different reservoirs. And when we break that down, as we noted, there were some specific areas that we've had concern with over the years, that being in the plat alluvium south of Springfield, in which case our total we felt was running close enough to 50% that we could probably put that into a phase two groundwater management area. And then the Takema results that we've talked about over the years, we constantly have higher nitrates in those medium and deeper wells in Takema. And because it's accounting for over 64% of the results from those medium and deeper wells, we felt that was another area that should probably be a phase two. So when we look at those areas, this is not something you're going to decide on tonight, but when we look at those areas, this is what you see. We basically took the Takema wellhead protection area outlined here in red and then defined the 9 square miles that encompass that wellhead protection area. So that could be an area as we get to the end of this deal and are ready to implement the plan that we could declare a phase two. The other phase two area that's outlined here is the where the plat alluvium, alluvial aquifer extends just south of Springfield. This is the city of Springfield. This is Highway 50 as it crosses the river right here. These red areas would be Papillion's wellhead protection area, Springfield's wellhead protection area, Cedar Creek's wellhead protection area. And so defining that area as a, again, another potential phase two area. Above that, we did have a couple of those areas that hadn't reached 50% yet, but they would probably be areas where we would want to increase monitoring. The particular line here that we're looking at is the Dakota sandstone area that occurs between Springfield and Gretna. And what we see there is that's where we have flown the recent AEM data. I'll show you a little bit of that. It's hot off the press, but that new data will help us define where we should be taking water quality samples to give people the best idea of what the real water quality issues are out there. So we might increase our sampling through that area. Finally, getting into the final results of the plan, the authorized controls are basically all the things that the Groundwater Management Protection Act allows NRDs to do. And in order for our plan to be flexible, we just put those in the plan and said, these are the different things that NRD can do. As we define our rules and regulations, that'll say, here are the things we're going to do. And there are some of these possible controls. These both address water quantity and some address quality. I won't get into too many of them. I guess here are the real examples that we pushed forward as we developed the plan and worked with the stakeholders. Was that what we would be changing from what Karen showed you is that we would be having groundwater management areas. We would have a set of 3 different criteria or triggers. And then we would implement more of these controls to be similar with other NRDs. Some of the specific items that were talked about, look at This is for quality. In some respects, defining or restricting fall application of fertilizer has been a big potential issue in a lot of districts, and it's something we could address here. In talking with some of the co-ops that provide fertilizer, our producers already do a fairly good job. They know in the bottom areas where we said they were vulnerable that they can't necessarily go out and apply fall fertilizer. And in the upland areas where they are applying some fall fertilizer, they're sometimes using an inhibitor, which keeps the fertilizer from becoming active until the ground warms up, basically. So these are options that we'll discuss and put more into the actual rules and regulations. So you see some of the different categories there of the different things we would do. And the levels here are kind of what this is showing then is, so everything's done, everything you do in phase one is carried out through all the different phases, no matter what changes occur. These are things, in general, what this is saying is you either encourage or do some of the same things we're doing now. Some of these things are actions we're already taking now. They're just not part of our plan. And so you take credit for those things that you're doing in phase one. As you move into phase two, it becomes more of a cost share or education issue. And then as you move into phase three, it becomes more of a, here's what you have to do to meet compliance. Again, a very busy slide. I think the biggest things here are that we're starting to come into, as far as quantity, more things that we would do, let other districts do. But we're not jumping in all the way right away. So a lot of these things like allocations on how much you could use for irrigation, actually having flow meters in all for all of our irrigation wells would occur if we went into a actually started to see groundwater declines and actually started to see some concerns. This is a list of all the water or quantity controls that the stakeholders kind of agreed would be good ideas to potentially pursue. And these are listed just in the appendix of the plan. This is a continuation of that previous slide, so it shows what things we do differently in phase two and phase three. And finally, the next steps of where we're what we're trying to address. I pointed out before that we were going to be hopefully submitting a plan based on your approval to DNR. And from that time, they have 90 days to review that. At the same time, we would be working on rules and regulations. You know, hopefully for sometime in July to August that we come back and have a public hearing and then final approval by the board on all three of those things. I think we'll kind of wrap it up there. I had a few more things to talk about, but they're things that we'll actually be able to address in the next couple meetings. We did just get the AEM flight results from Sarpy County, so it was delivered last week. So they're ahead of schedule on that. That's good news, and they'll be able to share some of those results with you that we found. And then the ongoing USGS study we have between the Platte and the Elkhorn River, some preliminary results are available there that we won't go into to now. I guess those are a couple new things that we might also add into the plan depending on different state agencies' review. So with that, Karen and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, we have a recommended motion here. Let's get the motion on the floor, then we'll get into questions and answers if we could, please.
I move a staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
And we just seconded. Anyone in the public wish to speak to this? Seeing none, directors? Director Bradley.
Please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to know about, you went over the, go back to the slide for controls for nitrates or for mm-hmm. quality. And I think there's one behind this, one or two. You went over there like quick what we might have to require.
Okay, this is
violators.
Yeah.
These are actually the statutes that are available to all NRDs to implement water quantity and quality.
I never got the packet. I'd like to get one if at all went after we this. And I was wondering, and I don't want to hog this all up, forgive me, but if we can increase sampling around where the chicken plant would be built near, you know, up there in Fremont. I know we have somewhere we're like real close adjacent to that. Some of us directors already get people calling us, talking to us, and so forth, and have that baseline and whatever monitoring wells we have ready. So can that be part of the master plan? Increase sampling, potentially.
It is. These are results we shared with the committee that USGS had. So we do have sampling, and these are not all the different sampling points over the years since 1992, but those are the kind of the most recent ones. So we do already have some nitrates in the area. It's difficult to discern where they're at in the, not necessarily by geographic area, but by where they're at in the water column. Mm-hmm. So we do need more data in that area. That in addition to the Sarpy County area I pointed to, that would be the next area we'd want to focus on.
Point source versus non-point source, and I can see some problems for somebody being able to escape out of, not say me, but litigation by saying, well, there was no real baseline, anything set forth. So how can you prove they were the ones that did it? And I've seen it time and time again throughout the state where there was, you know, toxic wounds even, and how can you prove it with them? And they get out of that. So the best evidence that we can compile now as a baseline and save us too.
Karen did do a little background on that in note of that we might have a question. That the other thing that she found out that, of course, there will be some pretreatment of waste at the plant that's going to go to Fremont for final treatment in their, as part of the sewage treatment. The, I guess, chicken producers around the area, whether they meet the minimum requirements of NDEQ or not, they would be required to do a nitrate management plan for how they're going to potentially field apply the organic waste. So they should be planning for and appropriately applying that even less than commercial fertilizer rates. You know, that's the plan.
And those exceed the NDEQ requirement, what they're proposing to do. They exceed what they would have to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I always said that if the NDEQ requirements meet the federal requirements, you always got to be cognizant of who's in charge of the federal requirements, the executive branch at the time. They can go up or down. Want to exceed the federal requirements in the near future, I would, my recommendation, little old me. I wanted to know also if you can tell us how much irrigation is going on in the district, possible.
I think we got a good an estimate in there, but I would document what we're trying to do is in the Platte Alcorn Valley or anything that drains to it. We've actually went through and identified areas that we're probably going to be working with landowners here coming up to certify irrigated acres, in which case we'd have everything well documented that this is irrigated or not. That's about 25,000 acres, we estimate. In the Missouri River Valley, extending from Blair all the way up to Dakota City, or Jackson, I guess we probably have an estimated over 50,000 to 60,000 irrigated acres. So I think we're somewhere in the 75,000 to 80,000 irrigated acres, roughly. And those are places that I think as the Lower Platte Basin plan was looking at, you know, how much additional water do we actually need if we get our average amount of rain, which, again, doesn't occur all the time. But if we get our average, we only need like 5 to 6 inches of additional water. And so a lot of these are there as backup plans to see what happens. But we do have, as we're kind of showing, we have a fairly ready supply of water. It's what are some of the quality concerns?
There is a section 2 in the report that talks about the demand, the current groundwater demand, and one of the graphs is pretty illustrative of the need in the drought years. This is the year 2012, what the irrigation requirements were, the water demand for irrigation. So all that information is in your packet. And if you need a hard copy, I'd be happy to supply. You do. Okay.
Yeah, and it's on the web. Everything's on the online.
You've never noticed any real decline in the water aquifer levels depending on any year. I mean, there's been some normal variations, but despite...
Absolutely. There's normal variations that Paul talked about related to the connection to the river, but no long-term declines like we're seeing in other parts of the state.
The next thing on the nitrate levels, have you noticed any increase in nitrate levels over the years, or has it stayed pretty steady also?
No, we have seen. There are areas that near Tecumseh.
Certain areas?
Yes.
Okay, and that's been an increase. It's not... Over the years, you've monitored an actual increase from a baseline. You've seen an increase over the years?
Yeah, we've seen a trend of increasing stuff. And there's a couple, there's a 2012 report that goes through some of that from USGS, but then in addition, taking all of their data is what we've used here to, it kind of seems when we do that analysis, we're kind of just putting everything in a pot and saying, does 50% of the samples exceed this? But I think as that goes on, it does leave us flexibility to determine, okay, let's look at the samples over the last 10 years. If that's showing an increasing trend, we're probably going to see a reason to go ahead and move that up to another phase and be proactive than sit back and wait for all this data to finally go over some threshold.
Okay, and finally, the last question I had was, I'm assuming all public water systems test and treat for nitrates, correct?
They test, and if they reach a limit, then they treat.
Right. Exactly.
Yes, they are.
So your major concern as far as public is those with their own private well. That would be a bigger problem. People with private wells, they have no way to treat it.
Yeah, we're trying to make sure we can identify.
I have a private well, so I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
So we're just trying to make sure. I mean, that's what most people were concerned about, is their private well system. Is the aquifer going to be sustainable for the long term, or are we adding too much nitrates to the system?
And that's
so that's what we're trying to do.
So kind of, I guess an example, the wellhead protection areas we have out of some 18 to 20 municipalities, only two of those actually have a wellhead protection plan.
Yeah.
So one of the thoughts would be, how can we encourage, and then the second part was cost share, to get people to actually produce a plan that would address their municipalities' needs as far as nitrates are
concerned. And so as far as like farmers irrigating and so forth, if their particular area is not an issue with nitrates, there wouldn't be any additional burdens upon them?
No.
They would just go ahead and...
That's one of the requirements. If you didn't set aside these smaller sub areas, then your rules would apply across the entire district.
Okay.
That didn't seem...
So it won't... Yeah. It's only going to affect those who have high nitrates in that.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think we're trying to be consistent with what they currently do. So... Phase 1 probably will have those application date issues that I mentioned,
right?
Mm-hmm. But it won't restrict the amount of fertilizer.
Okay. I just didn't want to see onerous restrictions upon farmers when their area doesn't have nitrate problem.
Correct. And the way the current plan is written, that's not an option.
I've got a question relating to high nitrates in the Platte River. Back when I worked for a living, we had problems with high nitrates because so much of the water would be pulled in into Platte River South Plant down on 36th and Platte River. There's so much, there's a big decrease in the natural flow, and the inflow from Salt Creek raised the natural, or the nitrates in the water. And it really, it's just a fact of life, it's there. What will that cause, what action would that high nitrate create other than causing municipalities to have to cut back on pumping from those plants? What other actions could you foresee?
Well, there's a lot of communities that are having to put wells in different areas to avoid the nitrates, and then they find they can't even find a place that there aren't high nitrates. So then they're having to put in reverse osmosis treatment, which is extremely expensive. Yes.
For a few days every two or three years, maybe.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Any other questions or comments? We have a motion on the floor. Roll call on the motion, please.
Let me find that here. All right. Director Teaser?
Yes.
Director Thompson?
Yes.
Director Fred Conley?
Aye.
Director Japp?
Yes.
Chairman John Conley?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you for being here tonight. Mm-hmm.
agenda.
Actually, yes.
Okay, we're on item 8, is a review and recommendation on interlocal cooperative agreement with the Nebraska GeoCloud and Airborne Electromagnetic Data Integration Project. Paul, please.
Good evening again. This item is brought before you basically because we had already worked with NRA to move forward on looking to get a water sustainability fund for this project. What this project does is throughout the state, the different areas that have gotten this airborne electromagnetic data, there's not a good way to currently share that amongst everybody, and there's not a good way to actively have a database that stores everything together. And that's important because there's oftentimes a lot of modeling that goes on for aquifers that cover multiple districts, things like that. So I guess the state looked at this as a way to integrate all the data together and use that. So the state was, by the state I mean UNL Conservation Survey Division, did submit a Water Sustainability Fund grant and was successful. Therefore, there was a 40% cost share required as part of that. And to make up that amount, NRA was funding some of that with their existing money. And then there was 10 other NRDs that had identified to split up the remainder of the cost. And that's the table you see before you there. So I guess the action here would be to approve the interlocal agreement in which the PAPU NRD would be funding $3,400 over the next 3 years. Is there any questions?
Do you have any presentation on this additional, Paul?
Nothing additional.
All right. Chair, entertain a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
A motion and second have been made. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Director Thompson.
Paul, you said the 10 NRDs, are these 10, did they all get grant or some didn't get the grant?
The grant was actually awarded to the state, to UNL. I guess lower.
There's a lot of grants.
You probably saw on the actual application was, let me think about that again. Was probably Lower Platte South NRD as a sponsor for the project. Is that right?
They were the project sponsor.
Yeah, they are the project sponsor for administering the agreement. And I believe they were part of the group or the main person that submitted the grant.
So this is just splitting up the 40%?
Yes.
Okay.
I think,
now it all makes sense.
I think we're actually approving a total expenditure over 3 years of $10,200, not $3,400.
Right, I said that over 3 years. Yeah. Three each year.
Right. Any other comments or questions? Roll call on the motion, please.
Director Thompson.
Yes.
Director Fred Conley.
Aye.
Director Japp.
Yes.
Director Teaser.
Yes.
Chairman John Conley.
Yes. Okay, now moving on to number 9 is review and recommendation on the Platte River Trail Phase 1. This is a MOPAC Trail Construction Engineering Service Agreement Supplement Number 2. Eric Williams, please.
Good evening, directors.
Good evening.
This project was started about 10 years ago, and we have spent a lot of time in design, planning, construction, and then supplemental documentation for about the last 2 or 2.5 years. This recommendation is for a supplement to the agreement for additional funding for engineering services to wrap up the closing documentation after the project has been completed. And so construction was done, and the trail was opened in July of 2014. And we've been working with Department of Roads on submitting what's called a consultant work order for the services that were performed by EGA on the project that were outside of the original scope. And we've submitted maybe 7 or 8 versions of that. A significant number of different forms of this But in talking with NDOR, everybody, the district, NDOR, EGA, all very interested in seeing the documentation on this project completed. And so the consultant work order that led to the agreement, the supplement to the original contract or the agreement with NDOR was approved, and NDOR indicated, yes, we want to move forward with this. The approval process is that EGA writes the consultant work order. They submit it to us. We review it internally. We send it to Department of Roads. They review it. In this case, they change staff and wait a few months. They send it back to us, and then the board approves it so that John can execute the completed document. So
it's a very efficient process.
It is. It's wonderful. So if we if you see the agreement is at $394,000, and this would be a change to increase to $406,320. And then the attachments or the documentation that goes with this are the resolution that NDOR provides with the agreement that we would ask the district, we would ask the board to approve, and John would sign. This first page is the cover sheet of the plan set from construction, which I think is dated 2009. There's an update from 2012, but anyway, that indicates how long we worked on the construction or how long ago. The trail itself, you can see, is along the Platte River, about 4.5 miles from Highway 50, parallel to Highway 31, down to the Lead Bridge. So in case you weren't here for any of the previous excitement, that's where the project is. But at this point, we have the documentation in hand. We need John's signature, and then EGA can move forward with signing, with completing the final documentation to get the project done and off of everyone's desk. Dan Dolezal is here from EGA, and if you have any questions about the documentation or the project, we'd be glad to answer those.
Were you waiting to retire until this got
until we get paid? I can't.
Let's get a motion on the floor, and then we'll discuss it.
I'd like to move staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Right.
Okay, been seconded. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? I've got one question. Why wasn't this anticipated when we went out and prepared the engineering agreement?
The scope that I had a conversation with the NDOR when I prepared my scope, and based on that conversation, I created my hourly matrix. When we got to the closing, we were given a list of probably 3 or 4 times the amount of paperwork and submittal data that we had to provide. So basically, the scope that I worked off of was much different than what the scope was to turn it in.
Okay.
It was the federal highway process, and I think God himself didn't know what the scope was.
No, absolutely.
And so that's who we got caught up in that.
All right.
Director, there's a list here of things that were on the original list and slightly different, so we've been documenting which exact forms NDOR did want or did not want, and we've been trying to keep track of that. So the scope is pretty different than what was originally anticipated.
Okay.
And that's just because of the length of the project. They changed their policies during the design.
They seem to change a lot of things.
Yes.
Any other comments or questions? Roll call.
Director Fred Conley.
Aye.
Director Chapp.
Yes.
Director Teaser.
Yes.
Director Thompson.
Yes.
Chairman Johnson.
Yes. Thank you. Now we'll get to the next item.
One more.
The next item is review and recommendation on the Elkhorn River Improvement Project Area, IPA. This is an operation and maintenance assessment. Eric Williams.
Yep. So this is an annual assessment on properties in the area of the Elkhorn River Improvement Project area. And for anybody who was not here originally when this started in 1984, we did find a copy of the original board that shows where the project area is located. And so that's from October 1984. And you can see 3 different shaded versions of the amount of protection provided by the project. And we are working on digitizing this so that we do not rely on the board that is as old as I am. But the project is roughly kind of the north Douglas County section of the Elkhorn River. Rock has been placed and other stabilization methods used to prevent loss of property or other infrastructure damage from the Elkhorn River through that corridor. And each year we then assess the properties that are protected in the corridor based on the three different levels of protection they receive and the land area of the property. So we have forms with Douglas County. We submit the list of properties in the area and then assess a total of $20,000 to help to grow the operations and maintenance fund up to a target balance of $250,000. Balance as of last week was $178,000. So for the next few years, we would continue to grow the operations budget. If any stabilization work is needed in the project area, we would then draw from this account to go out and design and implement stabilization through this section of the Elkhorn River based on the fund that has been collected. And so we do this each year, and the documents to levy the assessment on those properties with Douglas County are attached.
Chair to entertain a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? Director Teaser.
Do you anticipate any expenditures this year?
No, we've done a couple site visits over the last couple years. We haven't seen anything that looks like it requires any additional stabilization. There was the property north of the highway that we went out and visited. I know NDOR did some cleaning in that area. It didn't look like, I think that property is just on the outside, the north side of the bridge, or it's not technically in the IPA, so it would not be part of this work. We haven't seen any other areas that look like they need stabilization work, but we do an assessment each spring, so that's still coming up.
They have a concern right across from Elkhorn Crossing.
I did look at that area about a month and a half ago when I went up north of the highway also. I didn't see anything significant, but if there are issues that we should take a look at again, I'd be glad to go back out.
Anybody else?
I had one just quick question. Is this whole thing funded entirely by the landowners, or does the NRD contribute funds or just extra?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. I'm sorry. The first one, funded by the property owners. Okay. They are the ones who receive the protection here, essentially. Okay. There's not, other than the bridge at the north end, there's not a lot of public infrastructure between the two, so the benefits are primarily to the people who live in the area.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Roll call, please.
Director Jack.
Yes.
Director Teaser.
Yes.
Director Thompson.
Yes.
Director Fredcom.
Hi.
Chairman John Conley.
Yes. Thank you all. That concludes this meeting. We are adjourned.
We call the meeting of the FEL Subcommittee order. As stated earlier, the notification of the Open Meeting Act is posted on the door and outside with that horn call. Oh, let's see.
Hey,
we have a friend. You're going to fill in for Director Weiss. Thank you.
I want it back. It's very good.
Right here.
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 Item 4, adoption of the agenda.
So move.
Second.
Roll call.
Bradley.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. I have before me proof of publication of this meeting. Item 6, renew the recommendation of land acquisition for West Papio 1, West Papio 2, Regional Detention Basin. I have been advised that it is recommended we go into executive session for that discussion, and would someone make a motion?
I move we go to executive session to discuss land acquisition.
Second. Roll call.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Hi. Yes.
Bradley.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the
We made a motion to come out of the executive session.
We have a motion to come out of the exec. Is there a second?
I second it.
Thank you. Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Greg Conley?
Hi.
Yes.
Yes. Director Thompson, do you want to read the motion?
Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with Celebrity Homes Incorporated for the purchase of for approximately 35 acres to be verified by survey, for $52,000 per acre for the construction of the WP1 Regional Detention Basin project, and a purchase agreement with Celebrity Homes Corporate for the purchase of approximately 13 acres to be verified by survey, for $43,000 per acre for the construction of the WP2 Regional Detention Basin project, subject to such other terms and conditions as the general manager determines necessary and legal counsel approves as to form, and I so move.
Second. Does anybody from the general public wish to make a comment? Staff, the rest of us. Hearing none, roll call.
Bradley.
Yes.
Aye.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That concludes our agenda.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being
here. Meeting is adjourned by acclamation at 8:07.